If every time you pass your employee's desk, you notice that he's scrolling through Facebook or Twitter, the first question is what kind of results he's getting in his work. If his work is stellar, err on the side of assuming that he can manage his own time, since clearly he must be doing that effectively. But if that's not the case, it's reasonable to say something, especially if you suspect a connection between the person's focus and his productivity. For example, I don't mind if you take the occasional break to check the internet or your phone, but what I'm seeing is more than occasional. I'd like you to rein it in, especially when there are outstanding projects or emails that people are waiting to hear back on. I've noticed you're spending a lot of time on the internet, and I want to be transparent with you that it's made me wonder about how you're managing your time. Can we talk about how you're allocating your time and setting your priorities? 4. Your staff member is blowing deadlines. When you and a staff member agree on a deadline, and then that deadline is missed, it's important to follow up and find out what happened. If you don't do that, you're setting yourself up for missed deadlines in the future, since your staff member may conclude that letting deadlines slip is no big deal. But this doesn't have to be a big, scary, bring out the tissues conversation. In most cases, just asking, "What happened?" is enough to signal that you're paying attention and will create accountability. It can be this simple. "We had set last night as the deadline for getting this to me. What happened there?" In fact, "what happened" is an incredibly useful question for any situation where you need to create accountability and make it clear that whatever happened wasn't okay and shouldn't happen again. It also opens the door for your staff member to tell you something relevant that you didn't know, like, "our power was out and I couldn't get online to email it to you," or "I was in the hospital." If the issue is a chronic one and your staff member is blowing deadlines repeatedly, change the formulation to "what's going on" or "what's been happening." For example, "you've been missing deadlines recently, like the video blog yesterday and the grant report last month. What's been happening?" Again, this gives the person the opportunity to tell you things you might not know, like that someone else is getting in the way of her finishing her work, or even that deadlines haven't been as clear as you thought they were. But if nothing like that emerges, then you should do the following. 1. Explain the impact of the missed deadlines. For example, "when you get me work later than we agreed, it has a domino effect on me and others. I end up having to stay late to review it, or having to push others later in the process to rush their pieces of it. Or we look bad to buyers when we don't meet our timeline commitments. When we agree on a deadline, I'm planning based on that agreement, so it's really important to stick to that timeline or to give me early warning before any deadline is missed, if you're concerned about whether you'll be able to meet it." 2. Ask what system your staff member is using to track deadlines and her work overall. Does she have a system, or is she relying on memory? Is she working on things far enough in advance, or is she waiting until the last minute and then running out of time? Depending on what you find out, she might need some coaching on different systems or work habits that would solve the problem. 3. Be clear about your expectations going forward. It's okay to be pretty directive here, since a pattern of missed deadlines is serious. For example, "okay, going forward, we're in agreement that you'll start working on projects earlier so that you have a buffer if it turns out you need more time. You'll try the new calendaring system we discussed, and you'll come talk to me well in advance if you have any worries about your ability to meet a deadline. Does that sound right to you?" 5. Your employee says his workload is too heavy, but you don't think it is. If you have an employee who says that his workload is too much, and your gut tells you that it should be manageable, it's worth doing more digging before coming to any conclusions. Don't be afraid to ask questions to get a better understanding of the details of the workload and how long things take and why. Think, too, about what you've seen high performers in similar roles do, since that's a good source of data about what you can reasonably expect. But if you determine that the person in the job really should be able to handle the workload, a good formula for talking about it is, "I hear you, but what I need in the role is..." For example, "I hear you that it's a lot of work and it can be a challenge to keep everything moving, but I do need this role to juggle a high volume of work. My sense is that we could be turning around X much more quickly and hitting higher numbers on Y." 6. Your staff member gets defensive when you correct her work. Defensiveness is one of the most difficult responses to deal with when giving a staff member feedback, because it can prevent the person from really hearing and processing what you're saying. And human nature being what it is, it can make you less inclined to give feedback in the future, because encountering defensiveness can make the experience so unpleasant. The key to responding to defensiveness is to name it and identify it as a problem in and of itself. For example, I've noticed that when we talk about things you could do differently, you often push back and say there's no reason to change anything. At times, it can come across as defensive or even argumentative. Then stop and listen to how your staff member responds. She might be surprised that she's coming across that way, or might argue that her responses have been justified. If she continues to be defensive, you could explain further. When you respond that way, it makes it hard for me to talk to you about things I'd like you to try doing differently. I need to be able to bring you concerns or suggestions and have you really hear me. If you have a different perspective, I welcome hearing it. But ultimately, I need you to hear me too. And if you're automatically pushing back, it makes that difficult. When I give you input about things you could do differently in your work, I'm not being adversarial. It's how people learn and get better at what they do. We're partners in this work, and part of my role is to help you get stronger at what you do. Feedback isn't a message that you're failing. It's about how to grow in your job. Do you think you can try seeing it from that perspective in the future? In this conversation, pay particular attention to your tone. Because the person is already feeling defensive, you don't want your tone to sound as if you're criticizing her for an additional thing. Instead, your tone should convey, I think you do good work, and I want to help you do even better. 7. Telling someone to stop complaining about a coworker. If an employee won't stop complaining about a colleague, you need to be able to say enough without inadvertently shutting down future input that might be important for you to hear. To do that, express that A, you've heard the person out, B, you've considered his perspective, and C, continuing to bring up the topic isn't constructive and is becoming a distraction. And if circumstances allow you to explain why you don't agree with your employee's opinion, ideally you should do that too. Here's what this conversation might sound like. I've heard what you've said, and I appreciate your sharing your perspective with me. I've looked into what you've told me, and my take is different from yours because blank. I hear you that you disagree, but it's becoming a distraction to keep discussing it. At this point, we need to move forward. I welcome your feedback about what you need in your work, but I need it to be about you and not about Julian. Can you do that going forward? Alternately, if you agree with the person's take and you're working on addressing it behind the scenes, you might say something like this. I appreciate your sharing this with me, and I can understand your frustration. I'm going to be handling this, but I want you to know that I'm going to deal with it privately, so you may not see immediate evidence of that. Or, I'm addressing it the way I think will be most effective. From here on, I want to know if something changes, but otherwise, please trust that I'm on this. 8. Your employee does good work, but has terrible relationships with coworkers. When someone does good work, but can't seem to get along with any of his coworkers, some managers hesitate to intervene. They often worry that interpersonal skills aren't as legitimate an area for coaching and direction as, say, coding or presentation skills. But maintaining decent relationships with coworkers, at least being pleasant and civil to them, is as much a part of most people's job as anything else is. It's your job to explain that and hold the person accountable for it. Part of your job is maintaining good relationships with other people on our team. When people don't want to talk to you, they go around you, which makes our work less efficient. More broadly, when you're snapping at people or otherwise being grumpy with them, it makes for an unpleasant environment for everyone around you. To succeed in this role, it's not enough just to write great code. You also need to maintain good relationships with colleagues, because we're not a one-person shop. That includes not rolling your eyes at people, not snapping at them, and generally putting some effort into making your interactions with other people pleasant. 9. Two employees aren't getting along. When two employees aren't getting along, the first question to ask yourself is this conflict affecting their work or posing a problem for other employees? If two people simply don't like each other, that's fine. They're not required to. But they can't act in ways that create an uncomfortable environment for other people. And they do need to deal with each other pleasantly and professionally. If that's not happening, you need to intervene. First, it's worth getting a better understanding of what the conflict is about, because it might be rooted in genuine work issues. If one person is frustrated because the other keeps missing deadlines that hold up her work, or is rude to clients, you'll need to deal with that root cause as well. From there, though, talk with each person individually and say something like this. I understand that you've had some conflict with Morgan. I don't need to know the whole story unless there's a work concern that you want to share with me, but I do need both of you to behave pleasantly and professionally to all of your coworkers, including each other. I'm making the same thing clear to Morgan. You don't have to like each other, but you do need to treat each other civilly. That's just a basic part of the job for anyone working here. Can you do that going forward? In some cases, it will be just one person who has been treating the other poorly. In that case, it's worth saying to the target of the mistreatment, I've told Fernando that he's required to treat you politely and respectfully. If that continues not to happen, I need you to let me know so that I can intervene further. 10. Your staff member is too long-winded. If you have an employee who rambles and gives you long, drawn-out answers when you need something more concise, this is something that you can give feedback on. In fact, not just can, but should, because the habit is probably holding the person back professionally. Try saying something like this. Can I give you some feedback? When I ask you questions, you're very thorough in your answers. That's great in some situations, and I love that you know your stuff so well. But more often than not, I don't need so much information. I trust that you're handling the details competently, and generally, I'm just looking for the quick summary on whatever I ask about, the key headlines. I'll let you know if I need more, but often I don't. You might give a specific example or two as well. To give you an example of what I mean, when I asked you earlier today where we were with the billboard design, I just needed to know that it's on track to be finalized tomorrow, not the whole context about the issues with the font selection. It's important that that context be handled well, of course, but I trust you to take care of it, and just bring me in if you need my input on something specific. From there, as you move forward, it might help to give the staff member clear time cues to help her remember to keep it brief. For example, you might say things like, could you give me a quick 1-minute overview of X? We have 20 minutes scheduled, and I'm hoping we can cover X, Y, and Z in that time. 11. Your employee's stress impacts the whole team. If someone vents about stress constantly, or just doesn't control it well, that can end up stressing out everyone around him. If this is happening on your team, start by talking with the person one-on-one and asking what's going on. You seem pretty stressed lately. What's going on? This might lead to a conversation where you can provide concrete help with things like prioritizing the person's workload, adjusting deadlines, or suggesting shortcuts or more efficient ways to approach a project. But if the person is stressed out by things that are just normal parts of the job, issues where there aren't really solutions other than just roll with it, then you may need to explain that, name the fact that his stress is affecting other people, and ask about other ways it might be managed. I hear you that it can be stressful to have to get input from so many people and to make last-minute changes sometimes. It's really the nature of the role, though. Those things are pretty unavoidable in this type of work. When you complain frequently to coworkers about it and start most meetings by talking about how frazzled you are, it can raise the stress level for everyone. Do you think you can find other ways to manage your stress so that it doesn't spread to your coworkers as well? Depending on how the conversation goes, you might add, I want to be clear that I'm not asking you never to feel stressed. I know this work can be stressful. Rather, this is about being aware of how your handling of stress might be affecting colleagues. You can, of course, come and talk to me when you're feeling overwhelmed. I want to be a resource for you when that's happening. It's adding to other people's stress levels that I want to avoid. 12. Your employee made a serious mistake. Assuming that you employ humans, at some point one of them is going to make a pretty significant mistake. When that happens, your role is to A, ensure that your employee understands the seriousness of the mistake. B, find out how it happened so that you can ensure that there are plans in place to prevent something similar in the future. And C, if it's part of a pattern, address that pattern. What you don't need to do is berate or punish the person who made the mistake. Of course, if the person seems unconcerned, figure out why. But conscientious employees are likely already berating themselves, and you don't need to add to that. Here's how the conversation might go. First, ask for your employee's perspective so that you get a sense of how she sees the situation and how seriously she's taking the problem. Can we talk about what happened at the conference? I know there was a lot of confusion over who was speaking where, and some VIPs were locked out of sessions they were supposed to be attending. What happened? If you don't get a sense that the person recognizes how serious the mistake is, address that. Otherwise, skip this step. This is a pretty serious mistake. It reflects badly on us to important people who were doing us a favor by attending and makes us look like we don't have our act together. Ask how the person will avoid similar mistakes in the future. What are your thoughts about what you could have done differently and what you'll do differently in the future? It generally doesn't make sense to fire someone for a single mistake if the person's work is otherwise good, even if the mistake is a serious one, especially since most competent people will be extremely careful never to make that mistake again. But if the mistake is part of a larger pattern, like sloppiness or poor judgment, that's a different story. In that case, at a minimum, you'll need to address the situation more broadly as well. Go back to one in this chapter. And you should probably be thinking about whether the person is the right match for the job. 13. You asked someone to stay late or work over the weekend to fix a problem that you caused. Sometimes, as a manager, you will have to ask people to stay late or work over the weekend to finish up something time-sensitive. Your employees, if they're reasonable people, understand this. But an occasional necessary fact of life can quickly turn into a frustrating and demoralizing imposition when the request could have been avoided with better planning on your part. But that doesn't mean it'll never happen. It's a reality of managing, and you're not infallible. When it does happen, though, it's important that you acknowledge what happened. Definitely don't try to pretend the situation is anything other than it really is, or you will destroy your credibility. Apologize, and express sincere appreciation for your employee's extra trouble. And of course, work hard to avoid its happening with any frequency. Try saying something like this. I misunderstood our deadline for this project and thought we had until Monday to finish it. It turns out we don't, and we actually need to send it to the printer tomorrow in order to make our mail deadline. This is 100% on me, but can I ask you to help me get it into workable shape before tomorrow morning? I know that's going to mess up your evening, and I'm so sorry to ask it. I wouldn't make the request if it weren't crucial. Contrast that with the responsibility-avoiding version, which sounds like this. We need to get this to the printer tomorrow, so I need you to finish writing it tonight. You can see how that's much more likely to leave employees feeling resentful and wondering why they have to clean up a mistake that you're not even acknowledging you made. 14. An employee cries when you give her feedback. If you manage enough people for long enough, at some point someone is going to cry in your office, most likely when you're talking about something that went wrong with her work. As awkward as you might feel when this happens, the person crying almost certainly feels even more awkward about it. Because of that, if the person is just a little tearful, the kindest course is often simply to continue the conversation rather than draw attention to the crying. But if that's not practical, or you worry it would come across as callous, try saying something like, "I can see you're upset. Would you like me to give you a few minutes?" If the crying happens frequently, you might say, "I can see that these conversations are hard for you. Is there anything I can do differently to make them easier on you? You might find out that the person would appreciate a short heads up about the issues in an email before you meet. Or maybe she just needs a minute to compose herself. Or perhaps there's some other solution that would help. In some cases, the crying itself might be causing problems. If, for example, it's making people afraid to talk to the person, or if it's so out of place in your office culture that it's harming the person's reputation, then that's worth addressing on its own. In that case, you can be empathetic while also being candid about the impact it's having. For example, I know tearing up can be an involuntary reaction. I'm concerned, though, that it's happening often enough that people are becoming reluctant to tell you when something has gone wrong. I know there may not be an easy fix, but I want to make you aware of the impact I'm seeing it have. Am I saying I'm sorry to employees too often? A reader writes, I'm a new manager at a company where I've worked for years. In trying to adjust to the role, I'm realizing that I'm the sort of person who says sorry a lot. I'm not always doing it to take the blame on myself. I'm often doing it because I think it shows empathy and sometimes makes a situation less confrontational. Do you think this is hurting my effectiveness? I think I can apologize in ways that are still appropriately firm. For example, I'm sorry, I know this is piling on to an already busy week, but I need you to add X to your plate and get it done by Friday. But am I actually undermining myself by doing this? I think it depends on how often you're saying it. In the example you gave, where you're adding something on to an already full plate, it makes sense to acknowledge that. It would be a bad thing if you didn't acknowledge it. On the other hand, if you're apologizing every time you delegate work to someone, that's going to quickly become weird because it will start to sound like you feel sheepish about delegating, which will make your employees feel awkward and wonder why you're not more matter-of-fact about exercising normal authority. So it's a matter of balance. The expression isn't inherently problematic, but if you find yourself saying, I'm sorry, constantly, then yeah, I'd rein it in. And if you're using it to show empathy, keep in mind that you have a bunch of other tools at your disposal to do that. Thanking people in a genuine way for taking on extra work is one way. Making real efforts to help people manage a high workload is one more. Urging people to take a day or afternoon off when their workload allows it is still another. These things have a much bigger impact than just acknowledging, yeah, this sucks and I wish it didn't. So make sure you're doing them too. But again, I'm sorry is fine in moderation. The overall picture is what you want to pay attention to. 15. You heard that one of your employees is interviewing for a new job. If you hear that one of your staff members is job searching, it's in your best interests to stay calm and show that you understand it's not personal. Whatever you do, don't guilt trip the person or act angry or betrayed, or you will push the person out the door faster. People leaving jobs is a normal part of business. It's not a personal betrayal. Plus, if your other employees hear that you reacted badly to their coworker's job search, they're likely to make damn sure to keep their own job searches under wraps when the time comes, which means that you'll be forfeiting any possibility of generous notice periods from most or all of your staff. If the employee is someone you value and don't want to lose, say something like this. I know this is awkward, but I overheard you talking about interviewing for a new job. You don't need to confirm that if you don't want to, but I want to let you know that I value your work very highly and hope that you'll stay with us for a long time. If you are thinking about leaving, I'd really appreciate the chance to see if we can find a way to keep you happy here before you make any decisions. In addition, do some thinking on your own about what might be driving the person to job search. Money? Promotion potential? Frustrations with the job or with coworkers? There might be an obvious problem that you need to address before you can credibly ask the person to consider staying. And of course, if this isn't someone you'd be devastated to lose, there's not really anything here that you need to speak up about. In that case, it's fine to just mentally file away the information and let the situation play out on its own. 16. Telling an employee to dress more professionally. Telling an employee to dress more professionally can be tough because it feels like personal criticism as opposed to work-related feedback, which you're probably, hopefully, more used to giving. To make it feel less personal, it can help to think about it like this. The way the employee dresses is fine for her outside life. It's just not appropriate for this particular office or this particular job. So it's not about judging her personal style. It's just about ensuring that her choices are appropriate in this context. It helps, too, to go into the conversation thinking, I want to help this person be noticed for her work rather than her clothes. That mindset is likely to help you make it clear that you're on her side, which will make the conversation easier on both of you. From there, frame it like any other conversation where you're asking an employee to change something about her work. Here are some ways to say it. We have a relatively conservative dress code here, and it's important that you look put together. When you wear wrinkled or stained clothes or sneakers instead of business-style shoes, it doesn't look pulled together enough for your role. You always look very fashionable, but some of your clothes are a bit too revealing for the office. Higher necklines and skirts that hit closer to the knee work better in our environment and will help you be seen as the talented professional you are. I appreciate how professional you always are, but in our environment, we can't wear skirts quite that short. Stick with knee length or just above the knee and you'll be fine. For a younger employee who might still be figuring out professional dress, you might offer advice from your own experience. I know that when you're just starting out, it can be tricky to figure out what is and isn't appropriate for the office, especially on a junior salary. I went through that myself a few years ago, and here's what I found worked pretty well. Of course, it doesn't always have to be a big conversation. If the problem isn't a chronic one, often it can simply be addressed with a quick, hey, our dress code actually says no tennis shoes. Can you remember that going forward? 17. Addressing body odor. This is a situation even the most experienced managers dread. Telling an employee that he smells. Most of us have very little practice delivering this kind of awkward and highly personal message, but you do need to do it because it's likely affecting the way your staff member is perceived, and even the way your company is perceived if the person deals with clients or visitors to your office. And it's probably affecting his coworkers as well. Meet with the employee privately, preferably at the end of the day, so that he doesn't have to feel self-conscious sitting at work for hours afterward. And be honest, direct, and as kind as possible. Say something like this. I want to discuss something that's awkward, and I hope I don't offend you. I've noticed you've had a noticeable odor lately. It might mean a need to wash clothes more frequently or shower more often, or it could be a medical problem. This is the kind of thing that people often don't realize about themselves, so I wanted to bring it to your attention and ask you to see what you can do about it. Note that this language doesn't mention complaints from coworkers, even if you'd heard some. It's keeping it focused on what you have noticed. That's because you don't want to make your employee feel even more awkward by indicating that multiple people have been talking about this. 18. Employee seems chronically unhappy at work. If you have an employee who seems chronically unhappy at work, it's worth having a conversation to see what's going on. Note, though, that chronically is key. You don't want to swoop in demanding answers from someone who's just having a bad week. The idea here is to find out if there are problems that you might be able to help solve, expectations about the work that are out of sync with reality, or anything else that might benefit from open conversation about what's going on. The best opener for this kind of conversation is a simple one. Just ask this. How are things going for you at work lately? That might be all you need to ask to get the employee talking. Some people will open up in response to a simple invitation like this. Others, of course, won't, in which case you could move to, I might be misinterpreting, but you've seemed pretty down lately. I wonder if there's anything going on work-wise that's bothering you. If there is, I'd really like to try to talk through it with you and see if it's something that we can fix. If things have gotten to the point where the person's unhappiness is getting in the way of her doing her job, or where she's becoming disruptive to others, that's a different conversation. You still might start with a similar intro, but there may come a point where the conversation you need to have is this one. I know you've had some serious frustrations with your work recently. We've talked about your concerns with tight deadlines and having to incorporate input from Rupert that you don't always agree with. And while I hear what you're saying, I also want to be upfront with you about the fact that those things aren't going to change. They're really inherent parts of the job. I don't want us to have to constantly battle over them. That's not good for you, and frankly, it's not good for me either. Would it make sense for you to figure out if there's a way for you to be reasonably happy in the job, knowing that the things that have frustrated you aren't going to change? If the job just isn't what you want, I would understand that and would work with you on a transition if that's what makes the most sense for you. And to be clear, I'm not pushing you out. I think you do great work and want to keep you around. But I also can't keep fighting these same battles, and I doubt you want to either. 19. Asking an employee to stop working from home so frequently. Letting employees work from home when their jobs allow it is the kind of flexibility that tends to keep people happy with their work. But there are times when you might need to ask someone to work from home less often, like when they're missing important ad hoc conversations that would benefit their work, when they're not sufficiently accessible to coworkers, or when their colleagues are being forced to pick up their work in the office. In doing this, be explicit about what you want. Work from home less isn't nearly as clear as, I'd like you to limit your work from home days to twice a month. And explain your reasoning so that it doesn't feel arbitrary or punitive. I want to talk with you about how often you're working from home. I'm glad to give you the flexibility when the work allows for it, and I know how valuable it is to be able to focus without distractions. But I also think there's real value in being here in the office, because the nature of our jobs means we have a lot of ad hoc conversations that our work really benefits from, like the spontaneous problem solving we did as a group last week about challenges finding event space. Given that, I'd like your default to be working from home no more than twice a month. I know that we haven't clarified this earlier, so you haven't done anything wrong by doing it more often. This is just about how to handle it going forward. 20. Addressing sexist or racist comments. If you hear an employee make a sexist, racist, or otherwise bigoted comment, you have to address it, because you have both a legal and a moral obligation to ensure that your other employees aren't subjected to bigoted comments or behavior. If there are other people around when you hear the comment, you should ideally address it right on the spot, because otherwise you risk having people think that you're fine with whatever was said, which can make for a really uncomfortable environment for your other employees. Ways to address it on the spot include, I'm sure you didn't mean it this way, but that term is actually considered problematic because of blank. Whoa, we value customers and employees of all races and religions here. I hope you didn't really mean that. Hey, that kind of comment is not okay here. If you're not able to address it in the moment, follow up as soon as you can. At that point, you might say, I heard you say something earlier that concerned me. I'm sure you didn't mean it this way, but saying blank comes across as if you mean blank. You made a comment earlier that didn't sit right with me, and I wanted to ask you about it. You said blank, which I took to mean blank. Did I understand you correctly? I want to be really clear that that kind of comment isn't okay here. I need you to be respectful to people regardless of their sex, race, religion. Can you do that going forward? My older employee keeps talking about my age. A reader writes, I recently started a brand new position. They hired me as the department manager and also hired a project coordinator who reports to me. We have just completed our first week together. It has become quickly obvious that my direct report has a major issue with my age. I would guess I am 20 years younger than she is. She keeps making comments like, gosh, it's crazy to have a supervisor who is the same age as my daughter. Or, this structure will be an adjustment for me. I am used to being in the driver's seat. Good for you for advancing in your career so quickly. I've tried to use subtle humor tactics to deflect these remarks and pivot from her age hangups, but they continue to sneak in. How should I proceed? It doesn't help that we are both new, and she obviously feels like we are on equal footing. For the record, I am not that young, 37, nor do I look youthful, despite all those expensive face creams. When subtle humor works in these situations, it can be a great thing. It can let the other person save face and let you both avoid an awkward conversation. But think of it as a one-shot deal. If the message doesn't seem to land, then you need to move on to a more direct conversation. Continuing to just hint or pivot is too passive an approach for a manager-employee relationship. So it's time to switch over to being very direct. The next time she makes a comment about your age, stop the conversation and address it right in the moment. Jane, you've mentioned our relative ages several times. I'm assuming it won't be an issue for you. And then just stop and see what she says. She may squirm, she may be embarrassed, or she may dig in her heels and make another comment about how it's just unusual for her. If she does the latter, then you should say, "It doesn't strike me as odd, and I'd rather we not get sidetracked by it." Hopefully this will be enough to convey to her that the comments need to stop. But if not, and she continues to make this kind of remark, watch to see how frequent they are as she gets settled in, and also how aggressive they are. If it's just a couple more comments and they're not particularly egregious, I'd let it go. There's actually power in not being rattled by it, and in not feeling you have to address every little challenge to your authority. But if it's frequent or aggressive, then yeah, you do need to stamp it out with something like, "Our ages really aren't relevant here. Is there a reason you keep mentioning them?" My bigger worry, though, would be whether these are just naive and clumsy comments or whether they indicate a deeper problem with reporting to someone younger. If they're just annoying comments, you can probably afford to move past them pretty quickly. But if she resents having you as her manager or doesn't respect your ability to do your job, that's an issue you'll need to nip in the bud by addressing it just as you would any other performance issue. For example, "I've noticed you seem reluctant to take on assignments I give you. What's going on?" Or, "We agreed that you'd do X, but you did Y. What happened?" Escalating too, if it continues, "In this role, I need you to do XYZ. Can you do that going forward?" Meanwhile, though, the best thing that you can do is treat her as though you haven't even noticed your age difference. Don't let yourself feel awkward about it. Remember that you were hired for a reason and operate with the confidence of your position. 21. Your employee is habitually late. If an employee is regularly late to work, the first question to ask is whether it truly affects her work or her coworkers. There are lots of jobs where a bit of lateness truly won't impact an employee's effectiveness. And if that's the case, you should take that into account. But if the lateness does affect the person's work or other people, then you need to step in. If it's the first conversation you've had about the lateness, say this: "I've noticed that you've been coming in late recently. I need you to be here reliably by 9 each morning because otherwise people end up calling Paige when they can't reach you. Can you make sure you're here on time from now on?" If the problem continues after that: "We've talked before about the need for you to be here no later than 9, but you're continuing to arrive late, which leaves us short-staffed. What's going on?" Depending on the answer, you might then say, "I hear you that traffic can be unpredictable, and I wish I could give you more flexibility. The job really does require being here by 9, though, which may mean that you need to leave earlier in the mornings, even if that means sometimes you'll get here earlier than you need to. Is that something you can find a way to do going forward?" "I do need you to arrive on time every day. It's not a requirement for every job, but for this one, phones start ringing right at 9, and we need you here to answer them. Knowing that we can't be flexible on that, is there a way for you to make this job and this schedule work?" "I hear you that you're in a tough spot with childcare, and I wish I could give you more flexibility. The job really does require being here by 9, though. I can give you a few weeks to try to firm up your childcare arrangements, but after that, I really do need to hold you to that start time." When you can offer a schedule change: "I hear you that you're in a tough spot with childcare. Would it make sense to look at officially changing your start time so that you're coming in a little later and leaving a little later at the end of the day?" 22. Your employee is out sick, but posting photos from the beach on social media. First things first, are you absolutely sure the employee isn't actually homesick? People sometimes post vacation or other photos after the fact, so simply seeing them show up on a sick day isn't evidence that the person isn't actually at homesick. You don't want to be the boss who comes down on someone for lying when in fact the person was in bed nursing strep throat. But if you do know for sure, for example, if the employee is tagging herself as being in Ocean City rather than at home in Virginia, or is writing about a trip in the present tense, then you might choose to say something, if for no other reason than that unplanned last-minute sick days tend to be more disruptive than scheduled vacation days. Plus, obviously, the lying is a problem. There are a couple of ways to address this. The low-key, I know what you did on your sick day method. Did you intend to charge yesterday to sick leave or vacation leave? I saw you mention on Facebook that you were in Ocean City. The more direct approach. I saw your posts on Facebook about being in Ocean City. I had thought you were taking a sick day yesterday. Did we cross wires? Note that neither of these begins with an accusation. That's because if it does turn out that you're wrong, having started with an accusation will poison the relationship. Just seek information first. If it does turn out that you were right, then you can say something like this. I support you in getting the time off you need, but sick leave is different from vacation leave because it's unplanned, which means it can be more of a disruption of our work. Going forward, if you need a last-minute day off, come talk to me and we'll see what we can work out. But I'd like you to reserve sick leave for when you're sick. That's what it's for. All that said, even good employees play hooky occasionally. If the person is otherwise an excellent employee and this is a one-time event that didn't impact anyone's work, the smartest move might be to let it go and not bother with the conversation. Should you connect with employees on social media? By all means, go ahead and connect with employees on LinkedIn because it's a professional networking site. But when it comes to Facebook and other more social sites, connecting with people you manage can cause real problems. You might see things about their politics, health, or personal life that they might prefer you not know. Or, as I just discussed, you might see things that will make you uneasy, like that someone was out clubbing all night before she called in sick. It's a lot cleaner to just avoid all those potential complications and have an across-the-board policy of not friending people you manage. 23. Your employee is missing too much work. The first thing to do when an employee is missing a lot of work is to ask, what's going on? You want to start there because you might learn that the employee is dealing with serious health issues or is caring for an ill family member or has other highly sympathetic reasons for missing work. That doesn't always mean that you'll be able to accommodate a high number of absences, but it should at least inform the way you proceed and how you talk with the person. From there, if the person has a running litany of excuses, I hear you that you've had a run of bad luck, but I need to be able to count on you to be here reliably. Certainly life will intervene from time to time, but the frequency of your absences has been too high. Going forward, I need you here every day unless we've approved the time off in advance, or there's a very unusual circumstance, which I wouldn't expect to happen more than a few times a year. Can you commit to doing that? If the reason is more sympathetic, but you must also convey that you need more reliable attendance. I know you're having a tough time right now, and I'm so sorry you're dealing with that. We're at the point where the number of times you're out is starting to impact your work and other people's, so I want to talk about possible solutions. Depending on the circumstances and what's feasible for you and the employee, here you might suggest moving temporarily to a part-time schedule so that the person's workload better fits her availability, taking a short-term medical leave of absence, or other accommodations that might get you both closer to what you need. 24. Your employee is relying too much on your help. If you have an employee who defaults to bringing you problems to solve, rather than trying to resolve them on her own first, explain that you'd like her to operate in a different way. I'm happy to be a resource when you're stuck, but I'd like to see you trying to problem solve on your own first. I think you'll come to a lot of these answers if you trust your instincts and spend some time thinking problems through on your own. You can also check the department manual, which has some of these answers in it. If you're still stuck after that, come to me. But let's make it your default that you'll try to find the answers yourself first. After that, if the employee brings you issues that you think she should have been able to solve on her own, say something like, "What have you considered so far?" This is the sort of question where I'd love for you to devise a solution for yourself. What have you tried so far? What do you think would make sense here? 25. Your staff member is afraid to take on new things. When an employee is resistant to taking on new projects or responsibilities, sometimes it's because the person is already stretched thin, which is legitimate, and then you should dig in and help prioritize. But if your sense is that the resistance comes from fear of taking on something unfamiliar, that's worth addressing head on. Acknowledge that it's a new type of work, explain why you think the person will be good at it, and offer yourself or another appropriate colleague as a resource. For example, "I hear you that this is new and unfamiliar. I think you'll be great at it because you've shown such skill with X and Y, and I've seen you master new types of work pretty quickly in the past. But we're not going to just throw you to the wolves. We'll figure out the beginning stages together, and I'll help support you as you get acclimated to it. And Persephone has done this type of work before and will be a great person to provide advice." If you've noticed that the resistance is part of a pattern, you might say something like this. "I've noticed you tend to be hesitant to take on new types of work, but you're actually very good at learning new things once you start to feel comfortable. I want to see you continue to grow and stretch in this role, and I know from watching you in the past that you're more than capable of delivering on this." If you continue to encounter resistance and you need to convey that the person truly does need to take on the new project or responsibility, say this. "I hear what you're saying. I do need you to take this on, but we can revisit it in a month and make sure it's going well." Of course, be sure that you're reading the person's resistance correctly. You don't want to inadvertently mistake a well-founded concern about an overwhelming workload or a lack of training for a confidence issue. 26. Your employee's expectations for the job are unrealistic. If you have an employee who seems to expect the job to be something different from what it actually is, the best thing that you can do is to confront the issue head on. In doing this, be very straightforward about what the reality of the job is so that you can figure out whether the person actually wants the job she's in or not. For example, if you have a junior level employee who thinks she should be doing more senior level work than what you want to give her, you might say something like this. "It sounds like you're hoping to do more strategy work and interviews with reporters. I want to be upfront with you that this job is really about writing blog posts and managing our social media. You'll be able to sit in on strategy meetings sometimes, but this isn't a spokesperson role where you'd be doing interviews. I hope that knowing this, you'll still be enthusiastic about the job. But if you're not, I of course understand. Do you want to take some time to think about it?" If the person is extremely talented, add some extra encouragement by saying something like, "I do think you're extremely talented, and the experience you're getting here is going to give you a good foundation to move in that direction in the future. And we can make a point of investing in developing your skills to help with that. But I want to be very upfront with you about what the role is and isn't right now." 27. Telling an employee to stop going over your head. If an employee keeps going over your head to your own boss when he should be coming to you instead, it can be hard to know how to address it without sounding like you're trying to hide things from your boss. But the chain of command exists for a reason, and it's okay to tell people that they need to use it. You can say it like this. "I've noticed that you've been taking issues like X and Y to Maria. Part of my job is to handle those issues so that Maria doesn't have to. And frankly, I need to be in the loop earlier because I sometimes have info that Maria doesn't have. Going forward, please come talk to me about those things. If we're not able to resolve something ourselves, I may loop her in, but I need you to start with me." Depending on how your boss has been handling it when your employee goes to her, you might also ask her to direct the person back to you. If you don't get the sense that your boss understands why it's important for her to do that, you can try saying something like this. People should definitely be able to talk with you if they've been unable to resolve something with me that's important enough to escalate. But I'd like them to talk with me first so that I'm in the loop and can attempt to address the issue. Otherwise, I worry that it undermines my ability to manage them. If Dante comes to you in the future, would you try redirecting him back to me by asking if he's talked with me about the issue? And if he hasn't, telling him to do that first. 28. Setting boundaries with an employee who treats you like a BFF. As a manager, you can be friendly with the people who work for you, but you can't be friends. You're on an inherently unequal footing, and you need to be able to honestly evaluate people's work, give tough feedback, and even potentially let someone go at some point. Plus, appearances matter. And if people see that you're personal friends with someone on your team, they're likely to assume you're playing favorites, no matter how hard you try to be impartial. So if you have someone on your team who's making it hard to maintain that boundary, confiding in you about personal matters, inviting you to one-on-one social occasions, or otherwise treating you more like a BFF than a boss, you have to set a firmer boundary. Sometimes you can do this through subtle cues, declining invitations, wrapping up two personal conversations quickly, and so forth. But when cues don't work, you have to address the issue head on. Awkward? Yes. But if you're kind and matter-of-fact about it, it shouldn't be terribly mortifying for either of you. For example, I want to explain why I turned down your invitations the last couple of times. I think you're great, and if we didn't work together, you're someone I'd probably like to know socially. But while we work together, the most important thing to me is to be a good manager to you. That means that I need to be able to assess your work impartially and give you feedback. And I don't want you ever to feel that blurred boundaries make it hard for you to approach me if you're unhappy about something. I also don't want anyone else on our team to worry about favoritism. So I want to keep our relationship professional, but I really appreciate you as a colleague, and I'm glad to be working with you. 29. You've become your friend's boss. My sympathies, this is hard. When you become your friend's boss, the friendship needs to change. You can still have a warm, friendly relationship, but you can't be friends in the same way anymore. You can't have frequent one-on-one lunches or hang out outside of work or generally maintain the same level of closeness that you might have had. There's now an unequal power dynamic between the two of you. And your job is to judge his work and make decisions that could impact his livelihood. Even if you're convinced that the two of you can navigate this professionally, and for what it's worth, everyone in this situation believes that until something goes wrong, other people's perceptions matter. As a manager, you can't do things that will create the appearance of favoritism or unequal access. The best thing you can do is be upfront with your friend so he's not left wondering what's going on. Say something like this. Hey, I want you to know that since our work relationship has changed, I'm going to have to pull back a bit and have different boundaries, like not going to lunch together so much. I want to make sure that other people don't worry about favoritism, and I don't want you to have to worry about figuring out when I'm your boss and when I'm just a friend. I know this stuff has the potential to be weird, so I wanted to just say it up front and not have you wonder about why I'm suddenly not spending as much time with you. Please don't take it as chilliness. It's just me trying to make sure this works for everyone. 30. Your employee keeps complaining to coworkers, but won't bring concerns directly to you. If you have an employee who's constantly grumbling and complaining to coworkers, but never brings her complaints to the person who could act on them, you, it's worth saying something. That kind of constant negativity, even if it's low-grade negativity, can wear on other people and poison their environment over time, and it can even be contagious. Plus, if the person has legitimate concerns, those are things you want to hear about and discuss. It helps no one if the employee is grumbling out of your earshot. Try this. I think you've gotten into the habit of bringing your concerns about work issues to others on the team rather than to me. If you come to me, I have the chance to try to fix your concerns or to share things with you that might change your perspective. When you don't come to me and instead vent to others, we both miss that opportunity. Plus, you can end up inadvertently creating a pretty negative atmosphere for others. Going forward, I want to ask you to go to the person with the ability to do something about your complaint, which will often be me, rather than venting to others who can't act on it. 31. Your employee talks too much in meetings. Before you address this one-on-one, it's worth seeing if you can solve the problem by redirecting the person on the spot a few times. If you're able to solve it that way, you can avoid the awkward, "you need to talk less" conversation. Here's some language to try. Quentin, we've heard a lot from you today. Let's hear from people we haven't heard as much from. I want to give others a chance to be heard, so let's table that for now. I'm going to ask you to hold that for now, since we have a lot on our agenda. It's a good thought, but I don't want to spend too much more time on this today, since we have a lot to get through. I'm going to ask Lucinda to jump in here, since she has a lot of experience on this. But if that doesn't solve the problem, then it's time to talk to the person privately. You have valuable input in meetings, and you're comfortable speaking up, which is great, but I need to make sure that others have a chance to be heard as well, so I want to ask for your help in ensuring that we're giving others equal airtime. When you have a lot to say on a topic, it can be intimidating for others to cut in. I want to ask you to be more aware of how much you're talking in a meeting, and pull back if others aren't getting an equivalent amount of time. You could add, "Of course, there may be some issues where your role means that you'll have more to say than other people might. But when issues impact the whole group, I want to be sure that we're sharing time more or less evenly. I value your input in meetings, but I need to balance that with our need to get through everything on the agenda. Lately, we've been having trouble doing that, so I want to ask you to hold off-topic items for the end, if we have time for them, or save them to bring up with me in our one-on-one meetings. Otherwise, we end up spending most of the meeting on the first couple of items and never get to the rest." Employee is putting magic curses on coworkers. A reader writes, "I work in HR for a school division. I've recently been contacted by a supervisor in our company who has heard that one of his employees, Mandy, has been regularly cursing two other employees. By cursing, I don't mean using foul language. I mean she considers herself something of a witch and has been literally putting curses on these people." Some background. There are four people on this team: Jeff, Mandy, Whitney, and Roberta. Roberta is leaving, and I met with her today for an exit interview. I had already become aware that Mandy has, for whatever reasons, decided that she hates Jeff and Whitney. She has been bad-mouthing them to staff, and she bullied Roberta into joining her in her hatred. That I can deal with. It has happened before, and I have learned how to deal with workplace bullies and insecure people who feel the need to undermine the reputations of their peers in order to make themselves look better. What I'm concerned about, and what was confirmed by Roberta during our interview, is this curse. My information is that Mandy said something along these lines: "When people make me angry or cross me, I don't worry because I have ways to get rid of them. I've cursed them. I have a place in my house with candles and other items, and I know how to do that." Jeff thinks it is just silly, but Whitney is absolutely terrified. She's looking up ways to ward off curses online and starting to consider going on sick leave because she is afraid to work with this woman. To make it worse, both Jeff and Whitney got really sick and missed almost a full week of work, approximately 2 weeks after Roberta said that Mandy cursed them, which adds to Whitney's fear. To me, regardless of whether or not she is Wiccan or a witch or practices voodoo or whatever she does, this is a bona fide threat against another employee. I honestly want to treat this pretty seriously, separate from the bullying issue. Thoughts? I think that's exactly right. It's intended as a threat, and that's not acceptable. Normally, I'm a big fan of managers handling performance problems on their staff themselves, rather than looking to HR to do it for them. But in this case, since she's putting curses on her manager, I can see an argument for your having a one-time meeting with her and her manager and jointly laying down the law. Of course, this may just get you added to the list of people she's cursing, but black magic is one of many occupational hazards. When you meet with her, Tell her clearly that it's not acceptable to threaten to curse or otherwise harm anyone she works with, and that threatening people with harm, regardless of the means, is grounds for termination. Be clear that this is a one-time warning, and that if it happens again, you'll